one of the objectives we have over the next couple months is to help folks understand some of the circumstances that lead folks to a life of poverty. It could just be one bad decision or one unfortunate circumstance that spirals to a life of poverty. And we hope to examine what those decisions are, what barriers are keeping folks in poverty, and helping to eliminate some of those barriers in the future for individuals and families across the state.
Yes, well, that one thing that makes people poor, you know, like being born. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. That was Dave Reed, majority leader here in Pennsylvania. If you remember a couple years back, they did this playing poor thing. It's kind of the game they play for an hour. You try and figure out how you get on the bus and try and figure out how with tickets you navigate life. And it's all fun and games and it's happy. But it's supposed to get the legislators and, well, people to give them some bit of what it's like to be poor. Not like they're going to identify, but it's a fun game. Could have used it as a fundraiser. Who knows? Anyway, today, the 69th birthday of Hillary Clinton. So happy birthday to her. And the reason I bring this up in the context of both of them is the next president is going to have a lot of things that he or she, hopefully she, is going to have to deal with, and poverty being one of them. For me, I would love to see a robust stimulus with big jobs plans and all kinds of stuff. But the question comes, how do we help folks who are in poverty? How do we make sure that the next generation has the pathway out? Which is why I have asked Greg Kaufman to come talk with us. Greg is the editor of TalkPoverty.org, also a senior fellow at the Center for American for Progress. He has written a fantastic piece on basically what his hopes are for President Clinton, or whoever it's going to be, President Clinton, on what his dreams are for her to do something. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Always great to speak with you, Rick.
So I look at this, and you know, there's this thought, especially amongst Republicans, and the reason I played the Reid clip there is, you know, there's this thought that, well, you did something wrong. That's why you're poor. It's your fault, you lazy, you know what.
Right.
And it's not quite that way.
No, it's not quite that way. I mean, look, nearly 40% of us are going to spend at least 1 year in poverty during our working years. And over half of us will be in poverty or just above poverty for at least a year. So they have that wrong to start with. And I mean, you want to know what causes poverty? Hey, you pay me a poverty wage. That's a big part of it. So maybe we can, those guys can start, you know, now that they're identifying so much with what it's like to experience poverty, maybe they can start by paying workers non-poverty wages.
That'd be a good start. But here's the thing. The right then argues back, well, you're not worth better wages.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know, in the late 1960s, a full-time minimum wage worker could lift a family of three out of poverty. Now, that same minimum wage worker today, on average, is obviously a lot more productive, has a higher level of education on average, and is more than $4,000 below the poverty line for a family of three. So, you know, they index everything for inflation. They certainly index campaign contribution limits, not that those matter anymore, individual campaign contribution limits for inflation, because they know that their signs are going to cost more and their staff's going to cost more. But when it comes to the minimum wage and food and housing and healthcare costs rising, you know, well, that's just, it is what it is. So they're kind of, it's pretty absurd just on the face of it that they could, that people, particularly conservatives, not just conservatives, can say, you know, I care about people in poverty, but I'm also willing to pay you poverty wages, or I care about people in poverty, but hey, I can take a paid sick day to take care of my kid, but you can't. You know, you can go on and on.
Sure.
With these kinds of, you know, the personal failures of the policymakers. They're always talking about the personal mistakes or failures of people in poverty, but like the choices that we make are immoral. So I throw that morality argument right back at them.
As you should. I mean, at the end of the day, I have a lot of my pro-life friends who I say, if you're really truly pro-life, why don't we take care of the people who are here first, and then we can talk about everything else.
Yeah.
You know, because it's odd to me that the very people who are saying we need, yay, we're pro-birth, are the ones that as soon as the baby comes, we're not going to give them food or health care or education or any of those things, which it just blows my mind.
Yep. And it's important that another really strange thing is, you know, they're always talking about how crappy the safety net is. But we know that literally poverty would be twice as high, almost 30% without our safety net. You know, Social Security lifted more than 20 million people out of poverty last year. The earned income tax credit, child tax credit, lifted nearly 10 million people out of poverty. Food stamps, 5 million. So, you know, they just it's just, you hear the frustration in my voice because, you know, they talk about a lack of evidence of what works, but there's plenty of evidence that, you know, a lot of what we do is working, and there's evidence of what we could do, like create jobs to further help people. But that's not the evidence they want to pay attention to.
Right. And there's plenty of evidence of what doesn't work. Tax cuts for business doesn't work.
Right.
Creating the largest millionaire and billionaire class in the history of civilization hasn't helped and isn't going to. Because, look, I've always been a believer of, if the private sector refuses to or is unable to create enough jobs for everyone, somebody has to. Because I'm not a fan of handout programs by any way, shape, or form. Because I grew up getting food stamps, taking clown money to the stores, and how degrading and dehumanizing that experience was, and I want that for no one. But the idea of having everybody have a job and the self-dignity and respect that comes with that job, and be able to support your family, that's where I want to see things go.
That's right. And to see the kind of bold jobs program you're talking about that we need, and I know Secretary Clinton, in fact, DeRay McKesson wrote about this in the Post today. You know, the Black Lives Matter, one of the Black Lives Matter activists who's pretty well known at this point, you know, that she has a $125 billion economic revitalization program that targets youth unemployment and reentry and small businesses and home ownership. And that's great. But, like, that's going to take activism. And that's another thing that I think about a lot and talk to people about, is that, you know, the changes aren't going to happen from policy discussions in Washington or new talking points or a new paper. Even as recently, if you look at the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, has its struggles but has done amazing things for low-income people in particular. Some of the gains we saw in reducing poverty last year were related to the Affordable Care Act and people having health care. But, you know, that didn't happen in a vacuum. There were grassroots demonstrations going on all over about that. And you know, historically, New Deal didn't just happen. Civil rights legislation didn't just happen. So a lot of the movements we see right now, whether it's Fight for 15, which has totally changed the conversation about the minimum wage and led to, again, the increases we saw in terms of people at the bottom having better incomes last year, were related to that. But we got to kind of find ways to fuse these movements, I think, when it comes to Black Lives Matter, Fight for 15, Moral Mondays, the Dreamers. Because all of these relate to poverty and economic justice.
Yeah. So the question that I have, and in looking at your piece, you know, what's the hope that the next president, when Hillary Clinton's elected, and I think she will be, you know, what is the hope out of her? I mean, I go back to when President Obama took office, and I said my only hope for him is that he returns reward to work, that we pursue a policy of changing some of our broken labor law, pass the Employee Free Choice Act, do some of that thing so people can have better wages, hours, conditions, all of that stuff. What's your hope for the next president on the poverty front?
Yeah, and for working people, I think that what you just said still applies, doesn't it? And for the working poor, too. But when it comes to poverty itself, there is such a lack of basic understanding, okay, about who is poor, what our safety net does, how we can get out of poverty. So my first hope is that the next president start educating people and just speak directly about the facts and what we know. I also think part of that education process is going to the communities, speaking to people, sharing their stories. You know, the media and cameras will follow, and not on like the poverty tour was great when Bobby Kennedy did it. We don't need a tour now. We need a sustained interest. You know, we need visits regularly during the term, the first term,
right,
of the next president. And so the first part for me is sustained education of American people, removing some of the stigma and shame of poverty that people feel, and then connecting with these movements to implement some of these policy changes, whether you're talking about a jobs program, minimum wage, access to child care. It's hard to go to work when one out of six families who qualify for federal child care assistance receives it. I mean, we all want a safe place for our kids when we go to work. You know, it's tough to take a day off. You take a day off to take care of your sick kid when you don't have paid leave, and you lose a paycheck, and then you're homeless. I mean, and that's not, I'm not exaggerating. I know people that happens to. So there's sort of some low-hanging fruit that's like obvious to me when it comes to minimum wage, child care, and paid leave. But even that's going to take education and work. And then you look at jobs programs, immigration reform, closing the gender pay gap. It's down to 80 cents on the dollar women earn compared to their male counterparts. Do you know if we close that gap, you would reduce women in poverty, women and working families in poverty by half? So there's some aspirational stuff to do, and there's some stuff we can do in the short term, but all of it's going to take education and organizing by the next president.
I agree, but there are those who say that, you know, Hillary's not that person. She's cozy with Wall Street, and what Wall Street wants is basically what we have. So there's this thought that we're going to continue over the next 4 years down the same path.
I mean, I think that's a legitimate fear based on what we've seen in recent history. But I think the key is going to be to stay organized, keep pressure on. I mean, one thing that I think happened a little bit shortly after Obama took office is people kind of rested.
Yep.
And said, you know, okay, now do it. And we can't repeat that mistake.
I'm so with you, because I've been saying, you know, there are no saviors.
Right.
There's no Messiah. There's no one going to lead us to the promised land. We're going to push somebody in that direction, and that's what it's going to take. I mean, as you alluded to earlier, most of the New Deal policies, most of the stuff that FDR did was because you had all of that organizing that went on in the 1920s and before that of the labor movement, pushing for better conditions in horrible workplaces and all of that stuff. That's how it happened.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And you had leaders who were, you know, FDR was with you in spirit and needed the pressure and the organizing to make it happen. And I think, you know, one thing about Hillary that I've admired sort of in her biography is, you know, coming straight out of college and throughout, you know, she has definitely had an interest in families, children, and particularly low-income families and children. I'm not saying the record's been perfect, and I'm speaking for myself as an individual here, sorry, Rick, I've just lost the train of thought. There's hope through her biography that she does have a serious interest in children and families.
Right, and where my mind goes with that, and I don't know if this is sexist or not, it may be, who knows, but I get the feeling that she's more open to listen and more open to maybe sway her position a little bit because of that kind of pressure. Because I look at this primary. A lot of what Bernie Sanders was talking about was adopted in the platform and then became part of her campaign. So it does show me that she is capable of thinking a little bit differently and maybe moving in a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the base of the party has moved in a very progressive direction, and that's the time we're in right now. So hopefully she's a part of that.
Yeah, I go back, and my hopes for the next president are in line with what you're talking about, and that's using the bully pulpit to talk about poverty, to do something and move into some action. I'm right there with you because, look, hopefully most of us only are in poverty for a year. The sad reality is most of the people in it stay there for a lifetime, and there's got to be a way to fix it. If you want to take a look at Greg Kaufman's piece from The Nation, it's The Anti-Poverty President of My Dreams. I got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Greg's name, take you right there. Greg, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate you taking a little time for us.
It's great to talk with you, Rick.
You guys do fantastic work over there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Again, if you want to take a look at their website, also talkpoverty.org, we've got a link as well. Just go to ricksmithshow.com right there. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.